welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. We are here to continue previewing the 2017 NFL season. We're going to talk today about the AFC North, and my guest is a former guest on this podcast, the one of the people over at Football Outsiders, one of the writers and editors of the recent Football Outsiders Almanac. Is it 2017 this year? I guess that makes sense, right?
That is the year it is, yes.
I always get confused with that with Madden, where I'm like, is it 2018 or 2017? That shouldn't be the case with the Football Outsiders Almanac. It is Vince Verhey. Mr. Verhey, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mr. Barnwell. What's up in your world?
I am just trying to get through these divisions without anybody tearing their ACL or injuring themselves between the time we record the podcast and the time we release the podcast. And if there is any team that makes it difficult to pull that off, it is the Baltimore Ravens. Where is there anybody left in this roster who is not injured?
I don't think so. I think John Harbaugh is limping these days. Ozzie Newsome probably has a sore back. Things are not going well in Baltimore.
I believe Ozzie Newsome has a sore back. I feel like if anyone has been through the wars, it's Ozzie Newsome. But yeah, it's a mess in Baltimore. There are some serious injuries. There's minor ones. Joe Flacco's injured, but it doesn't appear to be a major injury. His back should be okay. But among the guys out for the year, we have Dennis Pitta, who appears to be done for his career with another recurrence of his hip injury. Crockett Gilmore, a fellow tight end, is out for the year. Kenneth Dixon is out for the year. Nico Siragusa, who is their fourth-round pick, who might have been a contributor at guard, is out for the year with a serious knee injury. John Urschel retired recently in August. So, variety of injuries, a team that was not exactly healthy. They were miserably hit by injuries in 2015, injured a little bit last year, but a team that's traditionally a veteran roster, a lot of guys who are on rookie contracts and a lot of guys who are cast off from other teams or guys they signed in free agency. So a mix of talent, a weird combination of guys, and a team that's pretty susceptible to injury. So Vince, do you think that the Ravens have already been hit too much by injuries to compete this year?
Honestly, I think at maximum health, they were a fringe playoff team at best.
Really?
And the basic trend for this team, before the injuries hit, our projection had them at 8.1 wins, which is right on the line, obviously, of fringe playoff contention. And this is, like I say, before all those injuries hit. This looked like a team that had a pretty good defense and very good special teams and one very bad and very boring offense.
That's very fair. And the offense has, even though they've changed the personnel, they've changed offensive coordinators, it does seem like one of the more sort of mundane, bland offenses in all of football. I mean, is there any reason you think that's the case? Is that just the nature of a Joe Flacco-led offense, or is there something that specifically you think they're missing?
It's Joe Flacco never met a check down over the middle he didn't like. Mm-hmm. And prepping for the show, I realized they say Danny Woods had two. Oh my God! So many 3-yard dump offs on third and long.
Mm-hmm. That got Kyle Juszczyk paid so much money, though.
Well, that's true. Someone else has to come in and fill that role, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Joe Flacco and his in the last four seasons, we track quarterbacks play by play, and his efficiency ranks in the past four years, he's ranked 26th or worse three times in the last 4 years. Mm. So he's not a good quarterback, and he hasn't been for most of his career. He had a hot streak that got him in a playoff, that got him a Super Bowl. He's had a couple of big moments here and there, but by and large, he's just a bland, boring, ineffective guy. Now you throw all his injuries around him. Kenneth Dixon was high on our list of our top 25 prospects. He was sixth in the top prospects list.
He's up for the year.
Tires, and I know they picked up Jeremy Maclin, but then all the tight ends are going down. And it just seems like I say, it's going to be check down hell all year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you'd think, okay, if we're going to build an offense around Joe Flacco, his strengths and weaknesses relatively, he has a big arm. He can chuck it downfield. You want an offense where he's going to be able to do that. And I guess in some ways you have receivers who can do that with Mike Wallace and Breshad Perriman, but it doesn't seem like they do that all that frequently, or they get the most out of it when they do throw the ball downfield. It's not as if they are, the Cardinals, for example, where they might not succeed super frequently, but when they do, it's a 30-yard gain. With Flacco, it seems like it's, if they're going to even run that offense, they're going to get the ball 3 or 4 yards downfield. They don't have a coordinator in Marty Morningweg who's going to be a guy who's going to chuck it downfield very typically. So it does seem like it's a weird mix of you know, of sort of playing to Flacco's weaknesses and perhaps negative tendencies and, you know, issues with the weapons they do have available for Flacco. I mean, do you think it's a thing where maybe it's the offensive line holding them back? Is it a thing where maybe the receivers just aren't very good? Or is it just that, you know, Flacco really doesn't have much to offer?
My opinion, this is one man's opinion, but my opinion is that it's mostly on Flacco. I think he's highly overrated. He's very overpaid, and that has stopped him from keeping talent like Kelechi Assembly, who's now in Oakland, who would be a good help on this offensive line right now. I think I'm such a huge fan of Ozzie Newsome as a GM, except for this.
the offense.
He's so good. He's so good at finding talent in the draft. He's so good at getting extra draft picks, but they've hitched their wagon to Flacco, and I think it's just been a mistake for half a decade now.
Yeah, and they can't really get out of it for the years to come. I mean, the contract they handed him after the Super Bowl was structured in such a way where they were going to have to restructure it and have to redo it after a couple of years, and they redid that, I believe, before the 2016 during the 2016 offseason, where he signed a 3-year, $66 million extension. So they are they're in the Flacco business for two more years. I mean, they don't get any cap savings by cutting him until 2019. So this is it for a while. If this is bad, they're going to be bad with him in the lineup. I mean, if you were, you know, do you think this is a team where maybe they just have to try and run the football and hope that that's going to be effective enough where they can maybe open up some shots downfield? Or because it felt like with Mark Trestman and to some extent with Marty Morningweg, they were a pass happy offense. They weren't a team that wanted to run the ball super frequently. And it seems like maybe that could be a solution.
Well, I would definitely would have said that before Kenneth Dixon got hurt.
Yes.
Now I honestly don't know what to do. They just seem kind of stuck. It's funny, you bring up that extension he signed. I remember last summer, I was editing an article on Flacco, and there were many references to the extension that made him the highest paid quarterback in football. And I thought the writer was referring to the contract extension he signed in 2013.
No.
So I was going through and changing all the references, and like halfway through, I realized, wait a minute, did he sign? He did. He signed a new extension just now. I was blown away.
Yeah.
So yeah, they've hitched the wagon to him for sure. I'm sorry. What was the other question?
It's just bad. I mean, do you think they should run the football more? Do you think it's a plausible, you know, a plausible process for them, or if they just try and become a really ground first team, if that could be a better solution than sort of forcing it with Flacco?
I think they're going to be what they've been for the past 3 or 4 years, mostly. They're going to be a team that relies on a lot of short completions, hoping guys can break tackles and get yards after the catch. Occasional long bombs downfield, but by and large, rely on a good defense and the best kicker in the league and try to win games 9-6.
That was the other part of it, right? Where it's almost like, you know, they get bailed out so frequently because their offense stalls at the 30-yard line and then Justin Tucker hits a 47-yard field goal 98% of the time. It's kind of crazy to think what would happen if they really couldn't get a Pro Bowl caliber season on an annual basis out of their kicker.
Oh, well, they'd be a 4, 5, 6 win team every year. And, you know, so far he's done it every year. Usually the kickers kind of bounce around a lot, you know, from the top of the rankings to the bottom. But he's been consistently great for a long time now, so there's no reason to think he won't be great again this year. Well, but if Tucker struggles, this is going to get ugly.
Yeah, he was 38 of 39 last season. He might not be quite that good again, but he should be one of the top 5 kickers in football. So it's nice to have that in your back pocket if you're going to play a lot of close games and if your offense stinks, but it shouldn't be an excuse for your offense to stink. It shouldn't be like, oh, well, we're going to be fine because we have a great kicker. It's like, oh, well, it would be nice if we could move the ball in the red zone and score some points, but it's a little bit of a mess there. And the defense, I think, is really interesting because they made a bunch of additions this year. You know, they signed Tony Jefferson, who was a useful safety in Arizona. They drafted Marlon Humphrey in the first round, who should be a reliable cornerback. They signed Brandon Carr, who had a little bit of a resurgent year last year in Dallas at cornerback. But at the same time, concerns about the front seven, maybe. They traded Timmy Jernigan. Zach Orr retired and then unretired and is looking for a job currently. Elvis Dumervil, who was not his usual self, was released and not really replaced. Tyus Bowser, which is a great name for a player, but he looks like he's going to be first in line maybe to get some snaps at outside linebacker. Albert McClellan, a longtime special teamer, could be in play there, but just seems like the defense is improved in some ways, but certainly the issues in the front seven or the lack of the talent that drained out in the front seven could counteract the improvements in the back end of the defense.
Yeah, I definitely like the secondary. Like you say, the safeties look very good. Mm-hmm. The corners look good. The run defense with Brandon Williams up front and C.J. Mosley, a linebacker, that should be not a problem at all. Should be a good strength. In fact, the biggest question is, are they going to be able to rush the passer? Mm-hmm. Rush the passer if Terrell Suggs is getting older, and he is. Can Tyus Bowser and Tim Williams, if they take the third round, are they going to be able to pick up the slack? That's the biggest question on defense, but and that's a big one. Pass rusher is, you know, obviously a huge, important position. But on the whole, I like their defense a lot.
Yeah, I think it definitely has potential. I mean, again, it's going to be a thing with injuries where if Suggs gets hurt again, that pass rush looks like it's in serious, serious trouble. If Jimmy Smith gets hurt again at cornerback, if Humphrey doesn't adapt quickly, if Brandon Carr ages, given that Carr is now on the wrong side of 30 at cornerback, that could go south pretty quick. But there's definitely talent there. They're not relying on Ladarius Webb. They're not relying on Rashawn Melvin. They're not relying on guys who are, you know, either too injury prone or just too much of journeyman, too replacement level talent. So it should be promising there. But do you think this is like a flawed model? I mean, it seems like they have been sort of treading water over the past few years. Like 2015, yeah, sure, they had a horrible stack of injuries and you couldn't really expect them to be healthy. But now 8-8 last year, came within a couple plays of making the playoffs. That Kyle Juszczyk run seemed like they was going to push them into the postseason, but instead they gave up a late touchdown to Antonio Brown and then ended up losing final week of the year. So concerns there. And do you think that they should, that this model works? I mean, should they think about changing their sort of broader idea of how they want to build this football team, or are they kind of just stuck until they can get out from underneath the Flacco contract?
I'm leaning towards the latter. Like I say, it's not like they're a bad team overall. Mm-hmm. They're defense heavy, but most teams are better on one side of the ball than the other. They're kind of stuck because the AFC North has been a pretty good division, mm-hmm. Especially with Pittsburgh, but Cincinnati's also been good for most of the past half a decade.
Right.
So it's been a tough schedule. And, of course, everyone in the AFC is playing a New England shadow. So, you know, it's not – this is not – what's a good example? Well, it didn't collapse like Arizona did last year, mm-hmm. although I think Arizona bounced back some. But, you know, it's not failing. It's just not doing very well. And maybe if all the luck runs out and they bottom out this year, maybe then they'll blow it up if they can. But it's hard to pull the trigger on something that's you know – Like you say, if Flacco plays a little bit better, if the defense holds up, they're only a couple of plays away from getting into the playoffs, then anything can happen. So mm-hmm. It's hard for me to say that, but you're right. They're definitely just kind of on the bubble every year and don't seem to be falling back or making progress.
Yeah. Do you have a breakout player for the Ravens this year? A guy who, you know, if he takes a big leap forward, they look like maybe a different roster or have a different level of performance that we couldn't have expected?
I got a couple of candidates. I think I picked more than one for every team here.
Okay.
I mentioned earlier Kenneth Dixon would have been the guy. Mm-hmm. He was number 6 in our top 25 prospects this year, but of course he's out for the season now. So I think the two for Baltimore that make the most sense. We talked about Rashad Perriman. Mm-hmm. He missed all of 2015, his rookie season. He only had one start last year, but in 2015, coming in as a rookie, we had him 4th in our playmaker projections for wide receivers in that draft mm-hmm. class. So he's had a lot of talent and production in college and probably still trying to get healthy last year. It makes sense that he'd be able to take a big step forward in 2017. The other candidate is a defensive lineman named Michael Pierce, who was an mm-hmm. undrafted defensive end out of Stanford. He's a big guy, I think 120 pounds, so there's obviously a lot of question about how he fits as a defensive end. But he had, in about one-third of a season last year, he had 2 sacks and also 33 tackles on run plays.
Wow.
So he could be a big part of the Ravens' defense to come.
To put that in context, how many run tackles on defense would a regular starter have in a given season?
For a defensive end, would probably somewhere around the 50s or 60s.
Oh, wow. So
to get to the 30s in barely, like I say, about a third of a year. Now, this part of that is just, you know, small sample size, too. But it was still great production and limited playing time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's crazy. I went with Perriman. I think that makes total sense. I just feel like this is his make or break year, entering the third year of his rookie contract. There's not much he can, he kind of needs to take that step forward. He's going to lose snaps to Macklin. Mike Wallace is a similar sort of player, but I think it was telling that the Ravens brought Wallace back, picked up his option, and he's back on the roster in 2017. I think if the hope maybe was that Perriman would be ready to take over as a starter there. So we'll see. There's certainly potential there, but some question marks after missing the first season and kind of not being 100% for most of last year. I had them at 8-8, which is right in line with the Outsiders' projection of 8.1 wins. Where do you stand currently, Vince, on the Ravens?
I thought 8.1. I was with you going into it, and the injuries haven't made them a better team. So maybe 8 wins leaning down, or you know, thumb is in the middle, pointing down, leaning down. But like I say, it's not a disaster. It's just not working well.
Yeah, not working well. A team that did not work well last year, somewhat surprisingly, was the Cincinnati Bengals, who fell apart. Injuries were a big concern there. Lost A.J. Green, had Tyler Eifert missing for a good chunk of the season. Defense was not what you usually expect, and they were very bad in close games after being a team that won a ton of close games the previous few years. 1-5-1 last year in games decided by 7 points or less. And then this year, you look at what they lost this offseason, and it's really troubling. They lost their two best offensive linemen in Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler. So do you think, Vince, that the Bengals can overcome that, or are there bigger concerns as they head into 2017?
You know, we just said I see the Baltimore as thumbs in the middle, leaning down. Mm-hmm. But the Bengals are kind of thumbs in the middle, leading up.
Really?
It's by a slight margin. But they did lose two linemen, but they planned for this because they drafted Cedric Abueke and Jake Fisher 1-2 in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as they drafted those guys, they said these guys are going to be our starters in 2 years. So they're ready to go.
Here's the problem.
They
though.
Added.
Those guys, I don't think those guys are very good. I don't think Agbuie's been very good on the right side. So now I'm concerned, if you have a guy who's bad on the right side, and now you're putting him in at left tackle, I mean, that plan makes total sense to me, and I think that's exactly what they did. But it's almost like they were like doomsday preppers, and they like, you know, prepared a bunch of canned goods, and then they went to go use them, and the canned goods had somehow gone bad, and they're like, well, this is our plan. We're kind of stuck with it now. I mean, it just seems like, you know, that food's still going to taste bad, even though they planned for it 2 years earlier.
That's fair. and frankly, the comparison of the Bengals to Doomsday Preppers has strong ties, the more I think about it. But it is a plan, and they are still young players, and young players often improve.
Sure,
so I'm not hope for that. Then you look at the talent they brought in. John Ross as a wide receiver. He led all wide receivers in our playmaker projections this year.
Mm-hmm.
And part of he's famous for setting the combine record, the 40-yard dash.
Yes.
But 40-yard dash is not a part of those projections. Just based on college projection or college production and the other athletic skills he showed at the combine, he should be a stud.
Sure.
Joe Mixon, we all know why he was available when he was available, why he slipped. But in our running back projections, he was a third running back in this year's class.
Mm-hmm.
But this year's running back class is so ridiculously deep. Between Leonard Fournette and Dalvin Cook and Mixon. And Mixon was only third this year, but you look at the same projections over the past 20 years, or past 20 years, he'd be in the top 15.
Wow.
So this is a once-a-year talent, and this is three of them this year.
Right.
So they should have a running back, a new stud receiver. A.J. Green and Tyler Reifert should be healthy again. Then last year, look at what the rookies had. Their first round draft pick was a cornerback who missed his entire rookie season due to injury.
Sure, William Jackson.
They had a fourth round pick. William Jackson, he has missed his season. The fourth round pick was a defensive lineman in Andrew Billings. He also missed the whole year due to injury. So between Ross and Mixon and Billings and Jackson, it's like they're getting four draft picks this year on throughout the team on both sides of the ball. So that helps.
The concern I would say about John Ross is that injuries might be a serious part of his future, where he was injured a lot in college, I believe, if you look at his history, and I could be mistaken, I'm not going to pretend that I am a college football expert by any means, but if you look at his track record, I think his final season in school at Washington was his only real season. Yeah, so he missed his entire junior season in 2015. He had 33 catches over his first 2 years, and then he broke out in a big way last year, 81 catches, 17 touchdowns, phenomenal year, but injuries are a concern there, and he's missed the entire offseason period so far after going, I believe it's shoulder surgery, if I'm not mistaken, earlier this period. Yeah, shoulder surgery. So he hasn't practiced yet, so that's a concern. With guys like Eifert, I mean, Eifert's incredible, but we know Eifert's injury history. He's a guy who doesn't stay healthy. If you get 12 games out of Tyler Eifert, you're counting your blessings and you're psyched. So, I mean, I would just be concerned about those guys Even Mixon, I believe, has a little bit of minor injury right now. So, I mean, you're looking at guys who, if they stay healthy, man, this team could be good. But I'd just be concerned about those guys staying healthy.
No, I live in the Seattle area. So I, for many years, listened to talk radio about the mm-hmm. Washington Huskies. And John Ross is always the guy who, if he never stay in the field, he's going to tear up the Pac-12. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, he stayed in the field, and he tore up the Pac-12. So maybe I'm looking at this with rose-colored glasses, or glass mm-hmm. half full, which, if you know me, is very rare. But I see the upside of this Bengals team more than I see the downside.
Yeah.
But you make good points. All these guys have been hurt before.
But I mean, I don't disagree with you necessarily. I mean, there's a lot of talent here. And you think, okay, well, if we can get, let's not say we're going to get a healthy Eifert and a healthy John Ross and a healthy AJ Green and a healthy Joe Mixon. Sure, we're not going to get all of those guys to be healthy, but let's say we get three of those four. Let's say we get two of those four. You're still looking at a pretty deep roster. And I mean, this is a team where last year, by the end of the season, I mean, Eifert was playing and he wasn't 100%. Green was missing. You know, they're really down to Tyler Boyd as their primary receiver at some points. And so they don't have to do this year. Boyd's going to get better after being a second-round pick a year ago. Cody Core could step in. Brandon LaFell was not terrible last year by any means. So they're deep as far as the weapons go. The offensive line, again, a little bit of a concern. You're hoping Andre Smith adapts at guard after re-signing in Cincinnati after leaving last year. But there's depth here in offense, and I have a lot of faith in Marvin Lewis and Paul Gunther to put together a competent defense. And a couple changes here or there. Kevin Minter's in. Carlos Dansby is out. So Arizona swapped there. Ray Maalugu, longtime middle linebacker, is gone. Damone Pekka is gone. But they've done such a good job over the years of developing talent, and they drafted on the defensive side of the football, that I have a lot of faith that, you know, the guys they have are going to end up being a pretty competent defense. So you would think, okay, healthier offense, good defense, that they would be, you know, a playoff contender. Where does outsiders have them projected?
Remember I said, I keep going back to this thumbs in the middle thing. Their official mm-hmm. projection, 7.9 wins, 17th on offense, 17th on defense. They're just kind of there. But again, I'm seeing this team. I look at this team and I see more of the upside. Jordan Willis, mm-hmm. The rookie pass rusher they got, was our second-ranked pass rusher prospect in this year's draft behind Miles
really?
Garrett. A distant second, but still second.
Sure.
So you pair Willis with Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins. Andrew Billings, if he's healthy again, they got a lot of talent on the line. Then you take the secondary. We got Sean Williams and Georgia Lockett, safety. Mm-hmm. William Jackson coming in with Pac-Man Jones and Jay Kirkpatrick at corner. A lot of talent there. So there's definitely tools to work with here. This cupboard is not bare by any means.
Sure. Do you have a breakout player for them?
We talked about Billings already. He got a lot of good press last year before his injury. Mm-hmm. And the other candidate, I think, is we got a guy named Nick Vigil, as a linebacker.
Yes.
Billings and Vigil are actually 9 and 10 in our top 25 prospects list.
Wow.
They both have a lot of talent, and they both, Vigil showed what he could do in a small sample size last year,
mm-hmm.
a small playing time, but they both have questions. Billings is a huge body. He should be a very effective inside lineman or in nose tackle type. There's mm-hmm. questions if he can be a three-down player and a pass rusher. And Vigil is undersized for a linebacker, so he's maybe another guy who may struggle with injuries. But they both have a lot of talent and a part of that front seven that, you know, like I say, there's a lot of toys to play with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And you would think that Marvin Lewis, whatever criticism he's come in for, you know, he's going to get the most out of a lot of those guys. He's been developing young talent in Cincinnati for a decade now. I had Cedric Ogbui as their breakout player. I just think it's such an important role for them, given how reliable, how effective Andrew Whitworth has been, how sensitive Andy Dalton is to pass pressure. I think by your guys' numbers, by ESPN's numbers, he is right up there with Ryan Tannehill as far as the guys who are most impacted by pass pressure. So I think that's the big concern for them. If they can get the offensive line healthy, this could be a very good football team. And even if they don't, I think this could still be a pretty decent football team. I have them going 9-7. I think they are on the fringes of the playoffs for me. I don't know if they end up making it as a sixth seed. I still have to perform calculations, still have to figure out where they end up in my projections. But where do you have them, Vince, if you had to guess a record for them heading into the season?
That is my subjective opinion?
Yes, your subjective opinion.
I think I got it right with you. 9 wins sounds about right and should be fighting for a playoff spot in Week 17. It'll probably come down about last weekend of the season. But I do think now largely because of the injuries. I think they've kind of passed Baltimore for the second place team in the division. Obviously, those two games against the Ravens are probably going to decide their season for both teams, actually.
And they play at Baltimore in Week 17.
Well, there you go. I was not even aware of that, but it works out perfect. Get your tickets now. It should be a big game.
Well, I'm sure we will get to advising people on where they should get their tickets during the break, but we'll be back with more of the Barnwell Show right after that. First, if you are a listener to this podcast, you know what I'm going to talk about. It's SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the best. This show would not exist if it were not for SeatGeek. I don't know that there would even be sports without SeatGeek. What would the point be? You won't be able to get any tickets because there'd be no way to get them. But SeatGeek, no matter what event you want to go to, they have the tickets. Whether it's a concert, sporting event, any sport you want, baseball, MLS, football season starting now, football tickets are coming up. If you want to buy preseason tickets, if you want to buy postseason tickets, I think that's even plausible. Certainly you can buy regular season tickets with SeatGeek, and they do such a good job. It is reliable, it's safe, you know exactly what you're getting. You are getting a good deal because you can use their deal score technology to know whether it is a appropriate deal for the tickets you want to get. And even better, you know how it goes. If you want to use SeatGeek for the first time, you can get $20 off your first purchase. To do that, just download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click out a promo code and enter my promo code, which is Barnwell, my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Download that app, use that promo code Barnwell, and you'll get $20 back after your first ticket purchase. So, simple as can be, you want to buy tickets that cost $21? They're $1. You want to buy tickets that cost $10,000? They're $9,980. I would say maybe lean towards the former, but I think SeatGeek would really appreciate it if you did the latter. Either way, make your first purchase today. Go to the SeatGeek app, enter promo code Barnwell. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm joined by Vince Verhey of Football Outsiders, and we are talking about the AFC North as we continue to preview the NFL season here on the Bill Barnwell Show. And let's go to a team that I would say can't really get worse. I mean, I guess they could technically go 0-16, but that would be particularly sad and depressing. And I think even as far as the Cleveland Browns go, I can't see that happening. Do you think that this was a drastically improved team from the team we saw in 2016, Vince?
Well, I'll get right to that point and answer that question. Yes, I do. I think they're better at almost every position, mm-hmm. with the notable exception maybe of what's going on behind center, which is a minor detail.
Sure.
But they're deep with offensive weapons. Big improvements on the offensive line. They got a couple of stud running backs. A lot of potential studs in the front seven, and their safeties should be much better than what they had last year. It's funny. I've been writing for Football Outsiders for the Almanac now for, I think 11 years. I think 2007 was my first year.
Jeez.
And, as time comes and goes, it's like any other job. Some days you have good days, and some days you're like, well, I think I could have done that one better. I was going to be blunt. I think I wrote three very good chapters this year on the Browns, Steelers, and Jets.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, the Browns chapter I wrote is the favorite thing I think I've ever written for Football Outsiders, just because, A, this team was so comically inept last year, but B, there are so obvious signs of improvement, if not in 2017, then in 2019 and 2020.
Mm-hmm.
The groundwork is being laid here for a revolution, and it's clear to my eyes. It's just going to take a little time.
Yeah. I will say my favorite piece I wrote for Grantland was on Jay Cutler, so I understand that, unfortunately, you can't pick and choose where you put your favorite pieces of work. It sometimes can be on people who are inept or teams that are inept, maybe even despite themselves. I agree with you. I mean, I think there's a lot to be excited about this year. The quarterback situation, again, it's a major question, and it's not as if they're going to compete for the Super Bowl either way, but there are concerns. And I guess the one thing I would say is this. I mean, you look at them last year. I went back and ran the numbers. They had five quarterbacks last year throw 20 passes or more, which I don't think has happened in 30 years. 1987 Atlanta Falcons are the last team to pull that off. So even if they get mediocre play from Cody Kessler, Brock Osweiler, and rookie DeShone Kizer, that would still be an upgrade. Just because you wouldn't have Kevin Hogan coming in for 20 snaps. You wouldn't have Charlie Whitehurst coming in for 20 snaps here or there. Just having guys who know the scheme, who are consistent, and who at least, Hugh Jackson can work with for a practice week would go a long way. So I think that would be, at the very least, a little bit of a positive I'm a little concerned about the receivers. They had Terrell Pryor break out last year, let him go. Maybe they didn't want to sign him to a long-term contract, but Kenny Britt, I don't know that he's a solution. I also will say, by the way, has anyone had a career where they were competent and yet played on so many bad teams as Kenny Britt has?
Steven Jackson.
Oh, yeah. That's
my all-time pick for a great player stuck on horrible teams is Steven Jackson.
Yeah, that's fair.
But just going over some of the stuff, it's amazing last year when you look back at what happened. Charlie Whitehurst was signed, played one game, didn't even start, 26 dropbacks, and he was cut. But if you look at his yards per play, he was Cleveland's best quarterback last year.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And you can have to mention, by the way, in the list of names, they also had Terrell Pryor throwing passes long after everyone knew, everyone figured out, including him, finally, that was a bad idea. It was just an unbelievable, unmitigated disaster. But looking at the wide receivers, I've been a big Kenny Britt supporter for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we actually ran a table on Kenny Britt this year, looking back over his primary quarterbacks each season. And when you look at it's Kerry Collins at the end of the line. It's Matt Hasselbeck at the end of the line. Mm-hmm. It's Case Keenum. The best quarterback he ever played with was in his rookie year when he got to play with Vince Young in Vince Young's last year.
Mm-hmm.
So the clowns who have been throwing this guy passes for 8 years now, and what he's been able to do. So he goes to the Rams last year. The Rams have just been an absolute black hole of wide receiver talent for a decade. The last Rams wide receiver before Kenny Britt last year to gain even 800 yards in a season was Torrey Holt.
Oh, no.
It's a long, long time.
Oh, no.
If they had a number one receiver, they didn't have a two or a three.
Yeah.
So Kenny Britt goes there last year. In raw total, he goes over 1,000 yards. So he was the best Rams receiver last year since the Greatest Show on Turf days. Fact. And then you look at it deeper. Through week 10, in our numbers, which look at not just catches and yards, but also incomplete passes that are thrown to him and first downs and a bunch of other things, he was a top five wide receiver in football through week 10.
Wow.
And then Case Keenum got benched.
Oh, no.
And Jared Goff, who had absolutely no business being on an NFL football field, stunk up the joint like we haven't seen since the halcyon days of Akili Smith.
I wanted to see where you were going to go with that.
From that point forward, Kenny Britt was a non-factor because what can you do? So I'm a big believer in Kenny Britt. Now, you put him in this team, and then after he was signed, Hugh Jackson still said, Corey Coleman's going to be the man this year. So Coleman's a first-round pick in 2015 going into his second year. There's obviously reason to be optimistic, but it says a lot to me that they paid Britt money, but they still expect Coleman to be the guy.
Yeah.
And Coleman came in last year, had 170 yards in his first two games, and then got hurt. And when he came back, it was the quarterback rotation from hell he got back to, and he couldn't do anything by the end of the year. But I see a lot of that's a really, really good starting twosome in my eyes. Kenny Britt and Corey Coleman. Now, I admit behind that, the depth is scary.
Yeah. That's the concern.
But as a starting twosome, I like those two.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think the bigger concern is, behind those guys, you're looking at Rashad Higgins and Ricardo Lewis, who were fourth-round picks last year. Jordan Payton, last year's fifth-round pick. A lot of undrafted free agents. Not much behind those guys. And they did lose, they cut Gary Barnidge and drafted David Njoku in the first round. They have Seth Duval, who some people are high on as like a fantasy sleeper. So I don't know. I think I could see a situation where it goes really well, and those guys are really productive and useful. Corey Coleman looked great before breaking his hand last year. But I just worry about injuries. I worry about the depth behind those guys. And if they're rotating the quarterbacks out every couple of weeks, I could see that being a concern. I will say, given those concerns, I think the defense has a chance to be a lot better very quickly. And I don't think a lot of that is Greg Williams. I'm not especially high or low on him. But I just think you look at all the talent they've added over the last 12 months with Myles Garrett coming in, Jabril Peppers taken in the first round as well. They actually found a pretty useful corner in Jamar Taylor, which was kind of a surprise given how bad he was in Miami, and then traded for Jamie Collins, who you would figure in a second year with the team, kind of get him there and working in the offseason, know he's going to be there for the long term after signing him to a long-term contract. You'd figure he's going to be better. Are you hopeful about this defense, or do you still think they're kind of a year or two away from being a competent unit?
I see a lot of youth in this defense, but I see a lot of potential, and I see, in the starting 11, I see seven or eight potential studs. Myles Garrett should be a rock star as a pass rusher. Emmanuel Ogba as a rookie last year was a decent pass rusher. He should be a lot better with Garrett on the other side. Mm-hmm. Danny Shelton looks like a road grader in the middle, blocking up the run. Christian Kirksey last year very quietly led the league in most stops on run tackles, most run tackles for a short game. That was partly because, of course, the opponents were running all the time. Mm-hmm. But still, he made the plays. Jamie Collins, we saw a lot of what he could do in New England. So I'm very optimistic about the future of this front seven. And you look at safety. They brought in Jabril Peppers in the first round, and they traded for Calvin Pryor, who Jets fans are probably listening to this and thinking, why would they do that? I went back and watched the Cleveland games. I didn't have a chance to see every single one of them, but I watched a lot of Cleveland games before I went back to write this book. I can't tell you how often it felt like they were playing with 9 or 10 men on the field. safeties, their scheme, and part of it is scheme. They kept a couple of deep safeties back to prevent big plays, but it didn't work. They kept the safeties back and gave up big plays anyway. So they're just out there lending nothing. Cleveland safeties last year had zero interceptions as a team.
That's bad.
Zero. We have a stat called defeats, which is any play that results in a turnover, a loss of yardage, or a third or fourth down stop. Mm-hmm. Cleveland safeties had a total of 12.
Oh, no.
Landon Collins for the New York Giants by himself had 24.
Oh, God.
So they never did anything positive. They were invisible. And yet, they were somehow still in the top 10 for safeties and missed tackles. I could not. It was just astonishing. Everyone talks about the quarterbacks in Cleveland, how bad they were. The receivers struggled because of the injuries. The offensive line was a disaster with Alex Mack gone. But let me tell you, the safeties were far and away worse than any of those.
Really?
So they bring in Jabril Peppers. They bring in Calvin Pryor. They also signed Jason McCourty, who might end up as a safety, might end up in the corner. That's kind of a question mark. But all this unit has to be is the second worst group of safeties in the league, and it's a massive improvement.
This is great. I'm super into it now. I want to watch the Brown safeties from last year now, I have to admit, which maybe I was not expecting to do after starting this podcast.
You can find them. It's hard to see them.
They are 25 yards at the line of scrimmage, missing tackles. That's fascinating to me. I mean, it's, you know, I think people really underestimate the difference sometimes between just having replacing replacement level talent with guys who are mediocre. Now, the Rumpers could be good, of course. Calvin Pryor could be good. You know, those guys are still really young. They could be developing. You know, who knows what's going to happen there. But just having guys who have a clue in some ways, such an upgrade, as opposed to taking, you know, kind of going from a guy who has a clue to a guy who's actually average or good.
No, I agree. And I also think, you know, safety is, you know, it's the last line of defense. So when they screw up, it's easy to spot. Sometimes it's harder to spot when they're doing their job by just preventing the deep pass ever being thrown in the first place. Mm-hmm. It's a very hard position group to analyze and to rate, but believe me when I tell you the Brown safeties in 2016 sucked.
You're so confident. I can't disagree. I have to admit, I didn't know a ton about the Brown safeties before this podcast, but now I feel so informed. Do you have a breakout player for the Browns this year?
We got... Our top 25 prospects list has some harsh restrictions. No first-round players allowed. No second-round players allowed. There's a certain amount of playing time guys have to reach. So the Browns on that list were not represented very well. Mm-hmm. Cody Kessler made the list, and if you read the text, it's saying, hey, we think this guy be a good backup for the next decade.
Sure.
And if you watch Cody Kessler play, you think, you know what? This guy would be a really good backup. Mm-hmm. we have Rashard Higgins on that list, but he's almost in the same spot. Higgins and Kessler are both guys who good motors, good intellect, good football IQ, very limited athlete types with low ceilings. So by default, I kind of go with Corey Coleman, 15th overall pick in 2016. And we talked already about how good he looked to start last year and how much confidence they have in him. So, Corey Coleman, breakout player for 2017.
I'm going with Emmanuel Ogba, guy who was far and away their best pass rusher last year. 5.5 sacks, 16 quarterback knockdowns. Nobody else on the team with more than 7. Had 2.5 sacks and 5 knockdowns over the final quarter of the season. So if you believe that, you know, you want to have a guy show more at the end of his rookie year, he did that. And of course, you know, he has Myles Garrett across from him this year. So you figure even if Garrett's not a immediate superstar pass rusher, you figure he's going to take some attention away. You'll have Ogba in one-on-one situations. That could be really promising. So I think Ogba has a decent shot. I don't think they're going to be 1-15 again. Where did outsiders project them, and where do you think they're going to finish this year?
The projection is 6 wins, which sounds great. Well, it sounds great, but keep in mind, the best and worst teams always end up better and worse than our projections have. 6 wins is the lowest total in the league.
Okay.
So they'll still be right up there in the top two or three teams in the draft in 2018. They should be. We're not confident in Cody Kessler. Nobody's confident in Brock Osweiler, but he's currently starting now, which is a terrible sign. we're not confident, frankly, in DeShone Kizer, who is kind of a scattershot at Notre Dame. So we don't think their next quarterback is on the roster right now. We think they're going to have to go get him next year. We're not confident in the cornerbacks. I've been saying glowing phrases about this team for the past 15 minutes, but believe me, there's still holes all over the place.
Yes.
So we think they'll be 25th or worse on offense, defense, and special teams.
Fair.
The schedule is tough. The division is tough. So, yeah, I definitely think they'll be better than they were last year. I forget how many close games they lost. It was like 4 or 5 one-score games they lost.
Yeah, they were 1-5 in games decided by 7 points or less last year.
Yeah, so you figure average luck there, though, is getting three wins. Woo! this looks like a 4-win, 5-win team to me, and probably a contender for a top 5 draft pick next year.
Yeah, I had them 4-12, and I think that's a big step, a big leap forward. I wouldn't be too upset if I was a Browns fan if that's all they did this year. I think it's more about, you know, the quote unquote process and how they perform, how they develop players, as opposed to their actual record this year. But Outsiders does have them with a 5% chance of winning 11 or more games. And I have to admit, I would like to see that season. I think that would be fun as hell if the Browns won 11 games this year.
I can only say that had Football Outsiders been around in 1999, maybe we would have said the same thing about the Rams.
Yeah. Crazier things have happened, for sure.
I doubt it, actually, but you never know.
Hey, I mean, the 2008 Dolphins. 2007 Dolphins were 1-15. 2008 Dolphins, in a division with the 16-0 New England Patriots, won the AFC East. Stranger things have happened. But you would figure the favorites, and I think everyone's favorites, to win the AFC North, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who Football Power Index gives a 56% chance of winning the AFC North. Certainly the favorites by all means. And Vince, are there any reasons to think the Steelers will not be the cream of the crop in the AFC North this year?
If you liked the Steelers' season in 2016, you'd probably really like the Steelers' season in 2017.
Right.
They should win the division. We have them as the second best team in football.
Wow.
But unfortunately, the first best team in football is still the Patriots. So they're going to have to find a way to beat New England. There are three main points to the Steelers' chapter this year. The first was about how important it is that they keep their top offensive players healthy and out of trouble.
Yes.
And the second was, can they find a breakout star on defense? Because they have a good defense with a bunch of good players, but they need to find one or two studs who can save the day when the offense is not at full strength.
Sure.
And the third one was, can they find a way to beat New England? And in the playoffs especially. It's a little bit overblown how much Pittsburgh has struggled with the Patriots. They actually have played better against New England than most teams have historically.
Sure.
It's just that the Patriots are so good. Yes. Steelers still lose more than they win.
Yeah.
But I look back, you know, you look at the Steelers' 4 offensive stars, Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, and Martavis Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
And when they have all 4 of those guys in the game, the Steelers' offense has played just as good as last year's Atlanta Falcons, which was the best offense in the league and really the best offense we've seen in probably since those 07 Patriots.
Wow.
When one guy has been out of the lineup, they've been about as good as last year's Raiders, which is a good offense, but nothing special and not one of the best in the league.
Sure.
And then when any 2 of them have been gone, they're about last year's Chiefs, which is clunky and explosive and just blah.
Sure.
So it's very important that they keep all 4 of those guys on the field. They've only had them all for 11 games in the past 3 years between suspensions and injuries. So if they can get all 4 guys healthy and available in the playoffs, then they can beat anyone. But it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
So that's the first question.
Yeah, that's the big concern, I think. And this is their best shot, having all 4 of those guys together, because who knows what's going to happen next year in terms of those guys sticking around. You figure Antonio Brown is locked into a long-term contract. He's set. He's not going anywhere. Martavis Bryant has already been suspended twice. That is a concern. Ben Roethlisberger has talked about retiring after the year. Again, not, you know, who knows what will happen, but it's a serious concern. He could be retired. Le'Veon Bell, that contract situation is really troubling. If he turned down a deal that was going to pay him $45 million over the first 3 years, or $42 million, I should say, over the first 3 years of the contract, when the top running back deal right now, LeSean McCoy, is for $24 million over its first 3 years. Sorry, $27.3 million, I should say, over its first 3 years. I don't know that a contract is going to come from Pittsburgh, given those circumstances. So this could be his last year in Pennsylvania. So that could be a serious concern. This could be their last shot. And, I mean, is there any reason to think that they are better equipped beyond having those four guys on offense? Is there anything to think they're better equipped on defense to compete with the Patriots if this does come down to the AFC Championship game against those Patriots again?
Well, we're kind of looking for trying to find who is most likely on this defense to break out. And sure. we'll jump ahead to the breakout question at the end of this. But they only have one player on the current defense who's ever played in the Pro Bowl, and that's Ryan Shazier last year, who played as an injury replacement. No one on their defense has ever been elected to the Pro Bowl.
Wait, James Harrison's never made it to the Pro Bowl?
You know what? You're probably right about that. I mean, have been looking at the younger players. Let me double check.
Okay, yeah,
that.
He's been to the Pro Bowl. To be fair, that was 6 years ago. Was the last time he went. So it's not as if he's playing at a Pro Bowl level. But I get what you're saying.
Thank you.
The young talent for sure.
Thank you for catching me on that. I should have said among their young players who's been there. He's a guy who makes a lot of plays. Mm-hmm. He and Landon Collins were the only players last year with at least 3 interceptions and at least 3 sacks. But he's been kind of unreliable. He has 14 missed games in 3 years. He also led the NFL with 20 missed tackles last year. So there's some ups and downs with him. Stephon Tuitt, a 2014 draftee, he led the team last year in combined sacks, hurries, and quarterback hits. Mm-hmm. This is very unusual for a 3-4 end unless you're J.J. Watt or Bruce Smith. So he maybe has some star potential. Bud Dupree is a guy who I know has been kind of a disappointment or viewed as a disappointment so far. He didn't play much as a rookie in 2015. Mm-hmm. He missed 10 weeks of 2016. But then from that point on, from week 14 to the end of the season, the playoff loss to New England, he played 455 out of 460 snaps.
Wow.
Had 5 run stuffs, 5 sacks, 2 passes defense, and a forced fumble. So he flashed by the end of last year what you'd hope from a high draft pick like him.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm going to pick one guy who could really be the difference maker, it's going to be Javon Hargrave.
Really?
Who looks like not just the stud nose tackle, but in 2017, if you are a 2-down player, you're really just a part-time guy. And he looks like at least a 2.5-down player.
Interesting.
He's a guy who has enough passer stability that he should be there sometimes on third and long. He doesn't automatically need to leave the field when you know the other team's going to drop him back to pass.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of weird to have a nose tackle maybe as your biggest defensive star in this day and age, but he's a guy who has the potential to make that happen.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Cam Hayward's a pretty underrated player who got him paid a lot and had a big contract, but was playing at a high level before he got injured last season. So you'd hope that if he gets better, you know, if he comes back and he's 100%, suddenly that defensive line looks pretty good. If Bud Dupree is playing at a high level, suddenly that front 7 looks good. They did lose Lawrence Timmons, who wasn't his old self, but was still, you know, kind of knew where to be and was a useful player, especially on rundowns earlier in the season. Kind of got exposed a little bit in the AFC Championship game. James Harrison is still there. He is 77 years old. He would still whoop me. I'm trying to think. With one hand tied behind his back, sure. With two hands tied behind his back, I would figure he could still kick me. With one leg and two hands tied behind his back, I might have a shot, but I still wouldn't want to risk it.
I think, well, with two hands tied behind his back, he's just going to run at you and clobber you to the ground. Or me, by the way.
Yes.
He'd just be a freight train knocking over, so you wouldn't want that either. It's always just a bad idea. I'm older than he is. I don't know. but he is 39, and I think when I look this up, there are only 5 players in league history who have ever had a sack at age 39 or older. It's Bruce Smith, and I forget the other down, but it's a short list.
Mm-hmm.
So we are approaching the limits of what the human body can do as far as aging pass rushers in the NFL.
Yeah.
Now, that said, if he never gets a sack again, like you say, he would beat the holy tar out of both of us. So
yeah.
God bless him.
God bless him is right. Please don't come after me. I think you'll be great forever, James Harrison.
Please don't be mean to us, Mr. Harrison.
Yes, precisely. So, yeah, I just think I could totally see a situation where this defense does get better. but it's also not a guarantee. The safeties are a question mark. The secondary, a lot of young talent, but no guarantee those guys are suddenly great. The front seven, again, a lot of reasons to be hopeful, but this could be a situation where they are a team that has a top five offense and a, you know, 20th best defense in football by DVOA. Could be a team that has a top five offense and a top 10 defense, in which case, like I said, they were 11th last year, so you figure that it's going to be a really good football team. But, you know, there's a lot up in the air, and this is going to be their shot, it feels like, where, again, we don't know if they're going to be with Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell next year. Next year could be a rebuilding season in a lot of ways for the Steelers. So I think a really fascinating year for them, and a team that, you know, this is their shot. I mean, this is their best shot. The problem is, like you said, the Patriots are also competing for the next year or two with Tom Brady, and they look phenomenal. So do you think there's any shot they have of winning in the AFC Championship game if it does come down to those two teams, or is it just they have to hope that someone else knocks off the Patriots and they have to play the Raiders or the Chiefs or somebody in the AFC Championship game?
Well, of course there's a shot. I mean, there have been much larger upsets of New England that we have seen. So, I mean, these Steelers beating these Patriots wouldn't come close to being the Giants and over the Patriots in the Super Bowl either time.
Sure.
Both of those were much bigger upsets than this would be. Mm-hmm. It's just because they haven't been able to do it yet, if they fail again, and like you note, there's reasons to think there could be big changes, even if not in 2017, then in 2018. Who knows what this team's going to look like. I can see why the window for this team as it stands, this could be their last chance. So there's just a lot riding on it. It wouldn't stun me at all. I'd favor New England.
Sure.
But, you know, but would I consider it one of the great upsets of all time? No, not as we're sitting here, you know, on a Monday afternoon in August.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 10.7 win projection from outsiders, 58% chance of contending for the Super Bowl with 11 plus wins. Where do you have them record wise in 2017?
10.7 wins, which again is second behind New England.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly the favorites in the division. One of the strong favorites in the playoff race. And the team most likely to step up in the lead should some catastrophic disaster strike Foxborough. They're in the best position to step into the Super Bowl favorites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have a win projection specifically, your own personal opinion?
10.7 wins right now, which again, you know, the best teams always beat their win projection, but they should be the best offensive football. We didn't talk about their offensive line, which as much credit as the guys in Dallas get, numerically over the past couple of years, Pittsburgh's offensive line has been better than them.
Wow.
Their pressure rate in the past three seasons, they've ranked second, first, and second.
Mm-hmm.
They're always top 10 in adjusted line yards, which measures how often an offense gets consistent yardage on running plays.
Mm-hmm.
So they have, numerically now, they've outperformed Dallas' line. Now, that's not a detailed film study. You can look at how often Dallas play against a loaded box or what kind of blitzes they face. But
right.
The results for Pittsburgh have been better than Dallas' offensive line in recent years. So this should be the best offensive football. Cross your fingers, knock on wood, hope everything goes well.
Mm-hmm.
The defense, you know, they won't be bad. It's just a question of how good they can be, and they seem to be solid on special teams too. So there's no real weaknesses here, and there's every reason to think they'll be a Super Bowl contender deep in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. All right, that covers it. I think we're on the same page. Steelers are the favorites. Bengals are second place. The Ravens are in trouble because of the injuries, and then we have the Browns improving, but holding up the rear in last place. Vince, please plug the book.
Hey, everyone, we wrote a book. We do it every year. People like it. Bill used to write it, actually, at one point.
I still like it.
Football Outsiders Almanac. It's available right now in PDF form at footballoutsiders.com. Also available in paperback at Amazon Amazon, but just Football Outsiders Almanac 2017. Kindle version is coming soon. It takes a while because we have to recreate all those tables, which is a time-consuming process that, honestly, we just pay someone else to do. it is on the way. So for all information, just go to footballoutsiders.com. There's a big banner at the top of the page that tells you where to get the book, as well as our Kubiak fantasy projections. If you're not doing well in your fantasy league this year, we can help you.
That's very promising. I'll have to keep that in mind. I'm pretty bad at fantasy football, so I appreciate the help. Mr. Verheyen, thank you so much. We'll have you back on, I'm sure, during the season to talk more about the football. We don't want to talk about the AFC North with you. You can cover the entire league, but I'll have you back on, I'm sure, later on during the fall.
Mr. Barwell, it's been a pleasure as always.
All right, guys, thanks so much for checking out the AFC North preview today with Vince Verhey. We're going to be back later this week. We have another division preview to get to. We have five more coming after these three. But thanks so much, and again, more on the way.